Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive.
That's what I want. I want to be a Bronco for life. You know, that's why I signed the deal I did last time. And, you know, the Broncos have been good to me. So if I play good, then they'll be good to me again. And I could finish my career here, and I don't really want to live anywhere else. So it's not just 16 weeks. You know, it starts in April. You know, so it becomes a grind. So, you know, a lot of people have been talking about how, you know, everybody's 5 minutes early to meetings. And that happens every year, you know, whenever you first show up. Everybody shows up 5 minutes early the first couple weeks. But what happens in week 16? When everybody's beat to hell, and nobody feels like being around this building, and we're all sick and tired of each other, are you still showing up 5 minutes early? That's when it counts.
No doubt about it. Derek Wolfe today out at Dove Valley. It's DMAC with Chad Brown. We'll get to what Michael Malone said defending the alleged tank. He's very sensitive about that, by the way. The Avalanche getting ready to face off against the Flames starting on Thursday. The Rockies are, oh my God. I mean, it got kind of exciting there when Trevor Story went yard again. It's one-run game, and then it just, I don't know, man. I'm getting a little desperate down there at Coors Field.
Are you worried yet? Because yesterday you were split between worry and, it's early, it's baseball.
Yeah, I'm all over the place. No, I'm not worried.
Is that the fan, DMAC, talking, or is that the baseball analyst talking?
It's both, because the worst mistake you can make in baseball as an analyst or a fan is to assume too much in the month of April. And teams go on runs. That's it. But if they're, you know, I'll give you this. If they're 8 games under 500 at the end of April, I mean, it's going to be tough. I mean, you want to be circling 500. You can be, I don't know, 2-3 games under 500, and it's all right. There's not a big difference if you're 2 or 3 games under 500 or 2 or 3 games over 500 in April.
What's that? The 30-game rule, right? That's what you're talking about?
Well, it's the you win 60, you lose 60. What do you do with the 42? And then right. You go to, well, of those 42 games, if they're somewhat of a coin toss, you know, what are you doing to win those games? Unfortunately for the Rockies here, they're just not in these. There haven't been, I wouldn't even say last night presented itself. It was a close game, but you were kind of trailing from the get-go. I mean, you were always trying to overcome something yesterday. So, but more what I'm talking about are games that could go, seem that could go either way. It's, 2-0, it's 3-2, it's 5-3, it's 5-5, and, you know, now we got 3 innings to go. That's a, it could go anywhere game. If you're down 7-1 or 7-2 and you're rallying, okay, you're rallying, but you were never in a position to win the game in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, whatever. Joel. I love Joel. Just talked to Joel the other day. Joel Klatt. Dude's awesome. If the Broncos draft a tackle at 10, Andre Dillard, help me out. Washington State, Pac-12 football. Tell me, anything?
Got anything? Obviously, Washington State passed the ball really well last year, but unlike previous Washington State teams, they actually ran the ball really effectively too, and he was a big part of that. So I think he warrants a pick in that area. I think Joel's right on track that he's going to be one of those top offensive linemen selected. Good in the run game, good in the pass game. All that is absolutely correct. But your point is not necessarily about the player. It's about what the Broncos do here.
What are you doing? What's your plan here?
And are you giving up on Garrett Bowles too early?
Yeah. When we want to talk about replacing Garrett Bowles, it's next year's draft. Okay? You got just too many other things that you got to take care of. Just too many. And I'm not saying, like, we talked to Dalton Risner, and we'll replay that in about 45 minutes. That dude was awesome.
He was great.
But how did we get Dalton Risner? He's going to go, like, 23rd, 24th, 25th, maybe in the second round at 34, 35, 36. I mean, how in the world are you supposed to get Dalton Risner?
And I don't think he's going to be an NFL left tackle long term anyway.
There's that too.
Okay, but the thing about this,
it's a big deal.
Let's sell this from a Bronco perspective as to why you would take the kid that Joe Klatt's talking about, the left tackle from Washington State with the 10th pick. You've got an aging quarterback that you want to maximize his production.
Yeah. Okay.
Left tackle becomes important.
Okay.
You've got
that's right, because it's win now.
You got a stable of
gotcha.
Some successful running backs
okay.
from last year who are only going to hopefully be a year better. How do you improve their productivity?
Okay.
You give them a better option at a left tackle.
All right.
How do you improve the running back's pass receptions? You have a left tackle that can hold his own. You don't have to chip. You don't have to keep it back in. They can release and now be more effective in the pass game on third down. There's a lot of ripple effects right. by improving that position.
You're talking me into it. What do we need more, a left tackle or an inside linebacker?
I think you need an inside linebacker more, but the ways of getting an inside linebacker, there's more inside linebackers available than there are quality tackles.
So the drop-off from Andre Dillard to the next tackle is greater in depth than, say, Devin White to Mack Wilson?
Yes.
Okay.
And again,
all right.
You, if forced to, you can find a linebacker who's not very good in the run game to hopefully help you with your issues with tight ends or running backs in the pass game. You can split those responsibilities up. You can't split your tackle responsibilities up. Bring a run tackle on the field, then bring a pass tackle on the field. That doesn't work. See, you tried that a few years ago with Stephon Nimbot. That wasn't very successful.
But we're done then. You're just cutting. I mean, I don't know. What do you do with Garrett Bowles?
Maybe you can try him at right tackle. Maybe you can try him at guard.
He's a swing tackle sort of guy. You keep him around.
Yeah.
He's your break glass in case of emergency.
You're not paying him a tremendous amount of money for a starting tackle because where he was drafted.
Could he be a guard or not?
He doesn't have the frame when you think of a guard, but he certainly would open up the possibility of pulling because of his athleticism. As far as the offensive line, he's a great athlete.
Mm-hmm.
The kid can run. And in the pass game, in the screen game, when he's forced to go downfield and pick up linebackers or cornerbacks, he's actually really good at that because he's a very good athlete.
Okay.
But to see him anchor against a 340-pound three technique, I don't think that's going to be a strong skill set either.
Just so I'm clear, a college guy, Andre Dillard, for the sake of argument, coming out of college is a better option than Garrett Bowles, who's played 2 years in the NFL.
The issues is,
because if you're going to draft Andre Dillard, he's starting day one, correct?
I would think so.
Right.
The issues that have plagued Garrett Bowles in college are still plaguing Garrett Bowles. So at what point do you say this kid's just not going to get it?
You tell me.
Or
what point is that? That's a good question. What point is that?
I don't know. I'm assuming they're going to have a tremendous amount of faith in what Mike Munchak can bring. But a coach can only coach a player who's willing to be coached. And no matter who's been his coach in the past, don't you think they've talked to him about these issues in college, in his first 2 years as a Denver Bronco? The whole WWE thing, slamming somebody down, that's going to get called every single time, man. And he's been doing it for 3 years and has been penalized for 3 years.
If you're telling me right now that's just it for Garrett Bowles, then okay, because you need a left tackle. And if you're just telling me from your expertise, or Mark's telling me from his expertise, or Joel's telling me from his expertise, this dude is toast, fine. If that's really the case, then drafting a left tackle becomes a no-brainer at 10.
I cannot say it as definitively as you would like. I think after this year, to your point, we would know without a doubt.
Yeah,
this
is a next year conversation. This is, but then again, if this is a just uber win now situation, right, then you don't have time. And if you're just telling me this guy is a better option than Bowles, then fine. And we'll just have to deal with whatever we deal with it. Inside linebacker, we may have missed out on a superstar and you are you don't trade back, by the way. I mean, if this is the guy,
this is the guy.
Well, then stay at 10 and draft him. And then Bowles is, you know, I mean, whatever. You know, the good thing, I tell you what the good thing is about the NFL in terms of these player contracts. If you can make a decision on these guys early on, you really don't spend all that much money. You're not wasting money. It's a totally different world than, say, Ian Desmond.
Right.
I mean, it's crazily different.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was on with Zach, and we went through the entire AFC West and the Broncos position group by position group. And to be fair to say, without a doubt, the Broncos have the number one outside linebacker group in the AFC West.
I would hope so.
After the improvement in free agency, it's fair to say the Broncos have the number one secondary in the AFC West.
I haven't dug into it, but I'll take your word for it. Okay.
The line group. I definitely don't think we're the fourth ranked defensive line in the AFC West. Probably not number one, but not the fourth.
Okay.
Two or three.
All right.
So you've got some number one groups over there on the defensive side. Offensively, do you have the number one quarterback in the AFC West? No.
No.
Do you have the number one wide receiver core in the AFC West?
No.
No. Number one tight end group in the AFC West?
No.
No. Number one running back group in the AFC West? Melvin Gordon's pretty good in San Diego.
I think about that a little bit. What do they got in Oakland? I don't even know what they got in Oakland.
No, and then they're missing Kareem Hunt's now longer with the Chiefs.
That's right. So maybe.
So maybe.
Maybe.
But you don't have the number one offensive line in the AFC West.
Okay.
Improving your tackle position would give you a bump on your offense, which is clearly, outside of possibly arguing about running backs, does not have a winning position group on offense. So do you strengthen your defense, which is already strong at some very critical spots, or do you strengthen your offense with this number 10 pick?
All right.
And I'm not saying this is what should happen. I'm just arguing the pro Joe Klatt choice here.
I'm still trying to figure out how you can drop back and pick up two first-round picks and get Garrett Bradbury at center and I'm still pumping up N'Keal Harry, even if you had to get him as high as 15, because you're probably not going to get him deeper in the second round now. Right. But... So I'm actually kind of with you, because the two guys that I'm really the most interested in are offensive guys.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I think, you know, you could still possibly in that scenario get Mac Wilson. Anyways.
It's going to be because there's just so many ways for them to go, and this team could use help in so many different positions. It's just going to be darn interesting. Particularly the 10th and the 41, what did they actually do?
Right.
After that, we'll see. But those first two picks will be very illustrative on how they view things on their roster.
Did you catch Michael Malone's comments?
I did not.
Michael Malone was very defensive about... The concept that the Nuggets were tanking the other night. Said that's ridiculous. We weren't tanking. Because there's a theory out there that the Nuggets are trying to ultimately avoid Houston in the playoffs.
Right. Trying to select their opening round opponent, essentially, by their choosing to lose.
Yeah. But he said the reason why we were resting who we were resting, they're a little bumped up. Everybody's going tonight, for example. Do you buy it?
I'll take him at his word, because there's more games to play and we'll see what happens. Now, if that thing continues where you're resting the entire starting lineup, then it's pretty clear what's happening. I'll take him at his word one time. Now you're going to show me after that.
Yeah, it's a little tricky, isn't it?
But I wouldn't fault them if that's what they were doing. But I think doesn't the NBA, they have some like anti-taking
rules. I don't know, do they? They have some in place?
In language kind of things. Like you can't like publicly admit to that. Even the Sixers couldn't publicly admit to that.
Mm.
Well, they tanked for like 2 years, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's worked out for them.
Well, I mean, you can tank just by having terrible players out there.
Right.
And I mean, you're not there. Hey, everybody try real hard. I mean, that's kind of the way the Nuggets were the other night. They were like, hey, I want you. And hey, the game was pretty close. And then at the end of the day, Isaiah Thomas was hucking up like 35-footers that had no prayer, like he normally does. And you just realize, wow, we can't win. We can keep games close, but there's just absolutely positively no way that we can that you can win like this. So when you're, like, I mean, the guys weren't even dressed. I mean, they weren't even, you know, they were in street clothes.
Right, doing the Popovich.
Right. Take it easy.
Yeah. We're happy with our playoff seating. We'll be good. Rest the rest of these guys.
Yeah.
Tim Duncan, sit down. Tony Parker, sit down.
You know, I actually love it because I get it. Because I've, you know, we've had this conversation for years about, like, you know, in the NFL, every game is life or death. Every game is the most important game of all time.
Right. You're the only person I know who's ever said that it's not. It's
right.
And you're never going to find a single football player who's ever going to agree with you. I see where you're coming from.
I look at the road non-conference games. I'm like, not a big deal.
Yes. I know you do.
Not a big deal.
Yes. And it worked out. Peyton Manning got his rest. He came back healthier.
And won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, but it wasn't on purpose.
Right. It worked. I mean, my whole theory worked. But they definitely did not do it on purpose.
Yeah, but you would have such a difficult time convincing any NFL or football person that's how they should go about it on purpose. Oh, we're going to chalk these two games up to losses. We're going to sit our starting quarterback down. We're going to rest our receiver and tailback. We're going to put our backups out there. And yeah. That's how it's going to go. It's just, it doesn't work that way. That's the baseball thing. So that's the baseball.
I finally know.
We've had enough baseball conversations.
Yeah.
I finally realized where that thinking comes from.
Mm-hmm.
Because in baseball, yes, you get to choose what games you're going to lose. You get to choose what games you're going to
lose. Well, you don't want to lose. You'll always take the win. But
you trot out your worst pitcher with the assumption it's probably not going to go great.
Yes. 1, 2, 3, Cancun.
Yes.
Right.
You want to
that
win.
That was the Nuggets years ago.
Yes.
You that was the Nuggets, right?
It was the Nuggets. What? Was it?
No.
Who was that?
I think it was
the
Odell Beckham thing.
Oh, okay. 1, 2, 3, Cancun. The Nuggets did a chant. It was like 1, 2, 3, 6 weeks or something like that.
Yes.
Yeah, something like that.
But so that's where this thinking comes from. It's that baseball thinking that you're bringing into football. Which, again, would make sense if you knew you were going to have your starting pitcher play the other games. In football, you just don't know. See, that's why you got to win every single one. Because you have no idea when your starting quarterback's going to go
down. You know, it's funny. Derek Wolf said today about how, let's see. Oh, right here.
Like I said, after I got that neck surgery last year, I feel like it added, you know, 5 years to my career. It just, I felt 5 years younger. You know, just getting used to not feeling like I was going to die every day, you know, like
I mean, pretty harsh statement right there, but I mean, I see where he's going. He feels rejuvenated because he shut it down. He got rest and, you know, it's different.
Feels better.
The whole concept of the idea of rest came from when the Broncos faced the Colts at home and Peyton Manning couldn't move. And it was like 3rd and 3. Remember that play? And he rolls to his right. He's got like 15 empty yards. Just it's like a cow's going to be tipped over by Dalton Risner at any point. And he makes this, instead of just, you know, just stumbling forward a few yards, pick up the first down, let's go. It's this like ridiculous, you know, pass that goes incomplete.
Uh-huh.
It's like, that was like the lightning bolt moment for me. Like, whoa. And then we find out how hurt he really was. And it was just like, wait a second. What are we doing? So when it comes to the Nuggets, I'm A-okay with it. They're not going to catch the Warriors. I understand Michael Malone wanting to say we weren't tanking, which technically he may be right because they weren't trying necessarily to lose. But the rest of his stars was more important than winning.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wasn't necessarily tanking, but he's willing to accept a loss. That's a little – is that different?
That is different. And – okay, so within football, if you've got home field and the number one seed tied up for the playoffs, a lot of teams will rest their starters or play them half a game, whatever the case may be. So, yeah, I'm cool with that. I'm even cool with Michael Malone doing that.
But not with NFL guys.
Well, it just doesn't – That whole process doesn't work as a plan early.
You know what's funny, though?
To look at the schedule and go, you know what? We can afford to lose to Minnesota because it doesn't matter.
Hardly any NFL guys, really, when you really look at it, actually play the whole season. I mean, almost every guy takes a ding here or there where they miss a week or two. Almost everyone.
Right. So that's why you can't look at the schedule and decide what games you're going to lose because you have no idea when you're going to lose players who can help you win the other games that you're planning on winning.
What about resting players?
In the NFL?
Yeah.
As long as you got back pages on contracts, players aren't, are going to be resistant
right.
to that.
Right. Because then they get all their incentives with percentage time of playing and all that stuff.
Right. You give me a... And how often do we hear about now at the end of seasons when bad teams start sitting guys down because they don't want them to reach playtime incentives? And we all get upset about that.
Right. Okay.
You know, how could the Bengals do that?
Good enough. Even though it makes logical sense what I'm saying, it doesn't make football sense.
It does not make football sense.
And football sense is just a different world.
It's a whole different world than baseball where you can... chalk it up to, you know, we had off months.
Here's what's going to happen, though, in the NFL. Somebody's going to come along with some different ideas and change everything. Like, basketball is forever changed. You realize that, right?
Yes.
Because analytically, they just figured out why ever take an 18-foot jump shot.
It's dunks and threes. That makes sense mathematically. I'm with it as well.
Well, then what took so long for everybody to catch up to it? I mean, why did it take all this time?
I think players had to get to a point where the three-point shot... Well, they grew up taking three-pointers. It wasn't a part of the game. They had to evolve.
Yeah, but the change really is it's being emphasized by the coaches.
Right.
For example, Giannis, the Greek freak, and Antetokounmpo.
Right.
He shoots 25% from three-point line, maybe even less. His coach, who probably is going to get coach of the year, is telling him, I don't care. You need to shoot four or five of these. Just like Jokic, every game needs to shoot 4 3-pointers at least. Got to do it. You got to be proficient in it enough that they got to come out on you because it creates space. Basketball has been changed forever.
Forever. I don't know if it was last time you saw a youth basketball game. Kids 6 years old who can barely dribble are throwing up 3-pointers.
That's what I would have them doing.
It's awesome. Just from the acceptance of that, but it's, you know, somebody.
I'd be like, Timmy, we have one ball handler. That's you, Timmy. And the four of you, I want you to line up. And, you know, Timmy's going to drive in because he's our best ball handler. And Timmy, if you're not open, just pass it to one of the four guys. And as soon as you get it, shoot. Coach? Yeah.
I watch these kids who can barely execute a layup line, hucking up 3-pointers. It just cracks me up because. To your point, the game has changed that much.
Forever.
Yes.
Baseball is changed forever with the shifts.
Yes.
They're trying to figure things out, like the proposed rule of a relief pitcher has to pitch to three straight people, that sort of thing. People are figuring things out. Hockey is infinitely more interesting with 3-on-3 in overtime.
Yes.
So exciting.
I hate it because I think the overtime play should mirror gameplay, but go ahead.
Whatever.
It's exciting to your point.
It was exciting, and ties sucked, and everybody loves it.
Ties do suck.
And they don't do it, and they change the rules. How about that? In the NHL, Chad, they literally changed the rules from regular season to the playoffs. Nobody cares. Somebody's going to come along someday in football and do something radically different. Could it be happening in Arizona?
It could be.
When we come back, there is significant evidence that that might be happening. Should the Broncos be following suit? Details next.
It's The Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Okay, the numbers are in. PFF's ranking of the 2019 quarterback class. It's interesting. Their guys in order. You ready for this? Well, Mike Evans should be so excited. Number one is Kyler Murray. You know what's interesting about Kyler Murray in this process, Chad? D-Mac with Chad Brown. I haven't seen anything where he's not the best quarterback.
No, he's consensus.
Pretty interesting.
Well, yeah, I think he's that far ahead of the rest, and the rest of the group is just not really truly NFL ready.
There's nothing mock-wise. There's nothing analytically. There's nothing that shows him but the best quarterback in this class. It's pretty cool.
His only negative, really, is his size.
Well, it hasn't stopped him from being rated just the number one guy. I thought his greatest liability, I swear, I really got hung up on how he presented himself Super Bowl week.
That was bad.
It was hard for me to get over that.
I'm with you. It was ugly. Didn't make himself look smart or a leader or even confident.
But we're so far away from that now, and everything is sort of still rolling in his favor. Whereas Dwayne Haskins has taken his lumps.
Yeah. I think you'd rather have some lumps early in the process than late. We've almost all forgotten about that. The whole Charlie Casserly thing, all that's blown over.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing on that is Charlie Casserly looks like a fool.
Right. It's true.
Anyways, here's what they got. Kyler Murray, Pro Football Focus, Dwayne Haskins, Will Greer. Oh, man, this is like one of Mike's favorite guys. Loves himself so much. The ultimate backup. Then Drew Locke and Daniel Jones. So no big, huge shakeups. Then they've got Ryan Finley, Brett Rippin, Gardner Minshew, Eaton Stick from North Dakota State, and Jarrett Stidham from Auburn. Well, now, we know the Broncos have had interest in Rippin and in Stidham. But these are, like we've talked about, magic mushroom lands, which, you know, as far as I'm concerned, is fine, Chad. If you want to, you know, I don't care who you take flyers on, fifth round and deeper, except I would stay away from punters. Because there's no point in drafting a punter and then cutting him for Marquette King and then just signing somebody else. It's stupid.
That was bad.
It's a dumb move.
That was bad. I suppose the surpriseness is that Will Greer is number three. Most of the mocks we looked up have Drew Locke well ahead of Will Greer's first
being that's taken. Interesting, isn't it?
It's not just a pure ranking, but you know, Drew Locke is a first round guy. I don't think I've ever seen a mock with Will Greer in the first round.
Well, there you go. The nerds. You're nerds from Sweden, Pro Football Focus.
I like those guys. I've been out there. I've visited. And they are improving their process continually. So this makes me think, do I need to look back at Will Greer again? I've kind of dismissed him because against his best competition, he essentially shrank in those games. Didn't play great. And I like players who play well in big games that mean something to me.
We'll have Dalton Reisner on with us in about 10 minutes. But before we get to that, just really quick. There is a really kind of awful story out there, but we know who the worst player in Major League Baseball is. Now, this is weird when you literally know who the worst player in Major League Baseball is, Chad. His name is Chris Davis. He is making, you ready for this? $23 million this season. Guaranteed money. Plays for the Orioles. He has played for 12 years. He had a bad season last year, and holy cow, he has set a new record, 0-49. I don't even know what to say. 0-49. I don't even know how this is possible, that somebody who is a major league player could possibly go 0-49.
I mean, even a blind squirrel finds a nut every once in a while, right? I mean, would think you would just...
You could stick your bat out there and it's going to float over the first baseman's head at some point.
Something would happen. Yeah, I read an article about this guy.
You hit a ground ball and it just happens to go between the third baseman and shortstop.
And it was a great article just talking about him trying to stay positive and people telling him, you know, just keep doing, you know, do your thing, stay in your routine and trying to resist the temptation to, you know, change things up. And, man, I don't know what you do when you're that far down the hole, when you're that deep psychologically, that the skills that you've used your entire life and for the first 10 years of your baseball career have just suddenly left you and you can't even get a hit?
Now, here's what's crazy. He hit 168 last season.
Yeah, it was terrible last year, too. It's been a long-going process to where he's at right now.
It may be the biggest lesson in epic failure in guaranteed contracts of all time in baseball. He literally can't play baseball anymore.
No.
But they're stuck with him. Now, let me ask you. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
What part? The guaranteed contract part of this? What part?
I guess so, yeah.
From a player's perspective, it's fantastic.
Right.
It's great.
Right. So why would NFL fans ever want the players to get guaranteed money?
They don't. The fans love the teams. They don't truly love the players because if you switch teams, they hate you. You loved me last year when I was a Pittsburgh Steeler. When I was wearing black and gold, you loved me. You chased me around the mall like I was one of the Beatles. It was insane. I am back here literally 9 months later in a different uniform, and you hate me, and you have weird things to say about my mother. It's just, as a player, it's just so strange. That you suddenly, I am hated when I was loved. But it illustrates the point. When a player holds out, who do the fans root for? The team. They want the team to win. They want the player to come back for the cheaper contract.
So really, Broncos fans aren't really pulling for Chris Harris to get an extension. Not really.
No.
When we come back, Dalton Risner from Wiggins to the NFL. We'll talk to Dalton Risner next.
Drive on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Well, one of the better stories out of this year's draft is about Dalton Risner from Wiggins, Colorado, who played his college football at Kansas State after being a total stud in high school. And we'll ask him why he didn't end up in college here in Colorado. But Dalton joins us. You know, you just had your visit with the Broncos. I mean, you're from Wiggins. Where did you stay?
Oh, yeah, definitely, man. I got in, had a ride straight to the hotel, got myself some dinner, woke up the next day, got some breakfast, and then had a full day at the Denver Broncos facility, man.
Were you a Broncos fan growing up?
Oh, most definitely. You know, I was a Broncos fan through the Jake Plummer days, man. I know all about the Broncos.
Okay. Why didn't you end up playing college football in Colorado?
Well, when it came to recruiting, you know, Colorado didn't offer until way late. So okay. They just really weren't in the picture. They just didn't offer me. Whenever it came to Colorado State, I really loved Colorado State. That was one of my top three teams. That was a school that I talked to my parents about going to.
Yeah.
I just kind of got the offer from Kansas State, and that was a very hard offer to pass up just with a program that I felt like I fit into and a coaching staff that I felt was amazing. So nothing against Colorado State, nothing against Colorado. I just felt like the best and biggest opportunity was for me down at Kansas State.
All right, Dalton. Now, I took some trips before I was drafted. Feels like 50 years ago now. But I'm assuming the process has changed. Tell us about what other teams you visited and take us a little bit inside those visits. Were you interviewed? Were you put on the whiteboard? How detailed into the football did these visits get into?
Yeah, you know, it's kind of all across the board. You know, you either have teams come visit you, and then they get to work you out. If they come down to your school, they get to work you out. So they get to see your flexibility. They get to see how you move. They also get to get you on the whiteboard, take you out for a meal. That kind of works when they come to you. But when you go to them, there is no working out. So it's a lot more interviews. But the difference is that you get to shake hands with the head coach. You get to talk to Fangio. You get to sit down with the general manager, John Elway. You get to sit down with the offensive line coach, Coach Munchak, Coach Cooper. And you get in depth and you start talking ball. You know, these guys want to know, one, they want to know what type of guy you are. They want to see your character. Do you know football? Do you love football? And it's a process. You know, you get to sit down with everyone across the staff. You get around some of the players. You get a tour of the facility. The most important thing is with your position coach, I would say. I know that they don't have the final call on draft day.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's more of a general manager head coach. But getting in front of an offensive line coach and showing them how much you know about football, that's extremely important. And then not only that, but watching film with them, seeing how coachable you are. You know, they're going to show bad plays. They want to see – Are you going to blame your guard? Are you going to blame your head coach for calling the wrong play? Are you going to own up and realize that you can't be perfect? So it's kind of all across the board, but I've definitely been learning a lot more as every day goes on.
You're one of only 5 3-year captains at Kansas State, which is very impressive. And I'm going to guess, and I guess I'm asking you how influential it was to have your dad be your coach in terms of football and leadership.
Yeah, first off, I appreciate that, man. You know, that's something I take a lot of pride in. Out of anything that I accomplished at Kansas State, by far, that's what I'm most proud about, was being able to do that. You know, it's a player's vote. You know, I got that when I was 19 years old. That was really, really special, man. And, you know, I learned a ton from both my parents, not only my father, but both my parents growing up, just in terms of what a true leader looks like and how it's not only raising your fist in front of the cameras and trying to look good. It's about earning the respect of your teammates. And you do that by working your tail off and making sure that you're doing everything right, because if you're going to hold your teammates accountable, you better be doing things right first. And, you know, both my parents, of course, my father as a coach, he instilled those things in me. But my mom was right there as well, and she was the one talking about how you treat your teammates and the type of person you are on and off the field. And I believe that all that plays into leadership. So, you know, hats off to them. And then, you know, I didn't show up at Kansas State this perfect crafted leader, and I'm not still. But my coaches at Kansas State, and Coach Snyder and Coach Dickey, my O-line coach, they transformed me as well. So a lot of kudos to them.
Well, I'm going to guess that led you to establishing your foundation. Why don't you tell us about that a little bit?
Yeah, I appreciate y'all asking about that, fellas. You know, I decided that I was going to come back for my fifth season at K-State. And, you know, me and my father were talking about leaving a legacy. You know, we want to really leave a mark at Kansas State. How was Dalton Risner going to be remembered? How was our last name going to be remembered in college football? And we're a big family that believes in how you treat people and the type of person you are off the field. I love this game of football. I hope I play for 50 years. I'm playing when I'm 70. But let's be honest, it's going to end for everybody. It's going to end for Tom Brady. It ended for John Elway. It'll end for me someday. And what matters to me is the way I treat people off the field. And that's what my foundation is. It's a really special foundation. It's a nonprofit 501(c). Different than any other foundation in my mind, because it doesn't have one cause. It's not directed to just kids that have cancer or the Boys and Girls Club of America. The Risner Up Foundation is dedicated to making a positive impact in someone's life. And whether that's being a big brother to someone with cancer, or being a big brother to someone that has a special needs, or, you know, helping out kids that get bullied, or giving kids from 1A schools around the nation hope that they can go accomplish anything that they want to. It's anything, you know. It's all about helping people and using this platform I have with football to be a good role model and make a positive impact, rather than being a bad role model and having a negative impact.
Hey, Dalton, could you give us the information how we could find out more about your foundation, a phone number, a website? And then one last football question for you. I know you played right tackle and center at Kansas State. What are teams looking at you for the NFL? Where are they projecting you as an offensive line position?
Yes, sir. You know, first off, with the foundation, you can find that at risnerup.com. It's a website that I just came out with that's pretty special. There's a contact us page within the foundation's website that you can contact me or my mom, who is my secretary. My dad is my treasurer, and I have two brothers that are directors, so it's a family foundation. And I'd love to hear from anybody and be able to help people out with questions. And two, it's so funny, fellas. You know, every team has a different need in the NFL, whether that's left tackle, left guard, center, right guard, or right tackle. And what I think is awesome about my ability is that I feel comfortable. It's one thing to say, hey, I feel, you know, I can do this. But to actually feel comfortable playing that position, which I do, you know, it helps me out a ton. So every team's been different. You know, there's been teams that already have two tackle spots filled, and they say, we want you to be interior. And then there's teams that have interior figured out, and they say you're a pure right tackle, and we might even move you to left. So every team has been different, and every team has a need. And the cool thing with me is that, you know, I tell them, well, listen, coach, where's your need? Oh, it's left guard. Well, coach, I'm gonna be the best dang left guard that you got. I can promise you that. Oh, you know, you need center. Let me show you, coach. I can snap. Watch, I can show you. I can snap here real quick. So that's kind of an element of my game that I've taken a lot of pride in these last 4 months, and tried to, you know, tell coaches that that's something I bring to the table.
Let me take a wild guess. You're a communications major at Kansas State.
Yes, sir.
Well, hey, listen.
That's pretty funny.
Us communication majors got to stick together, Dalton. Okay, we can.
Okay,
we can tell who each other are from a mile away.
I got you, man. I got you,
Dalton. It's a no-brainer for the Broncos to take you if that comes. It's just so tricky to know where you're going to go. And I have seen you, I mean, you, I haven't seen you anywhere deeper than a little bit into the second round, first of all. So, I, you know what, Dalton, I will just keep my fingers crossed and say, wouldn't that be awesome? But it's going to be awesome for you no matter what. And you've earned this opportunity and you're making Colorado proud. So we just wish you the best in what's going to be a really exciting couple weeks for you here before you go into pro football. So congratulations and we'll see. But it would be awesome to have you as part of the Broncos.
I really appreciate that, man. That means a lot, and I would be honored to be a part of a program like that and play for the coaching staff that I just met. Yeah. And I'll keep my fingers crossed as well, but at the end of the day, you know, wherever I end up, I know that I'm going to make the people behind me proud, and I'm going to be able to put on that helmet and go play. And if it's not the Broncos, you know, if I ever come visit, I'll make John Elway wish that he drafted me.
Nice.
All right, Dalton, we appreciate it. Best of luck. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, fellas. Have a good one, man.
You too.
Dalton Risner, Chad, chance of success for him in the NFL.
Hi, smart kid, multiple position flexibility. There will be a team who's going to value what he brings.
Good luck on your colonoscopy.
Colonoscopy tomorrow, buddy. I got a night of fun colonoscopy prep ahead of me. And anyone who's done that knows exactly what I'm talking about.
I'll just let all you people know what he's talking about without asking for details.
There you go.
I'd rather not dig into that. Thank you, Richie. Thank you, listening. Thank you, Chad. The Drive Reloaded is next.